I'm Coach Seb, and this is Running New Mexico. My guest today is Ben Fletcher, Santa Fe Prep standout, ran for University of Pennsylvania, a 2:16 marathoner, and Olympic trials qualifier this year. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. You know, my first question is, how did you get into running?
Yeah, so I think I've probably gone to running the same way that many runners did. They kind of played soccer and other sports growing up and found out they had a kind of a natural gift for it. I was kind of a well-rounded athlete as a kid, and then I did a couple middle school cross-country meets and did fairly well there. I wasn't, winning by a lot or even winning at all, but we'd do the mile every Thursday in our PE classes, and I tended to do fairly well in that. I was always kind of the maybe top three, and I think it was probably my eighth grade year at my school. We were small school division, so a lot of eighth graders actually compete in the varsity. So I competed, my eighth grade year at spring track, and did fairly well. Found success early on in the mile distance, and after that, just kind of stopped every other sport and gave everything for running.
You recently did an interview with the Santa Fe New Mexican, and I'll put the link to that in the notes, leading up to the Olympic trials. And your high school coach talked a little about how dominant you were in cross country your senior year. Can you talk a little bit about that senior year time?
Yeah, sure. I think, I don't know if I was as dominant as she recalls, but I was. My junior year is kind of when things took off for me. I finally put in the work in the summer, and I ended up, I think, fourth place at the state cross country championships as a junior, with the top three ahead of me, top two of the three ahead of me were seniors and graduating. So I expected myself to be a state champion my senior year. It didn't happen, but in the regular season, I did do fairly well. I think I was undefeated up into the state meet, and had a few digestive problems there and ended up seventh, so actually worse than I'd placed the previous year. And then at that point, that was 2004 in the fall, New Mexico participated in what was called Border War Championship, and it was kind of modeled after the Oregon-Washington model, and it was between New Mexico, Arizona, and Nevada, I believe, out in Tempe. And fortunately, I think the coaches association here knew how well I'd done and kind of maybe felt badly for me that I didn't do well enough at state like I should have. And so I was selected for that. And I think I was the second New Mexican runner there.
Oh, wow.
All division. So I was happy with that. And then, at the time, I think that was the first year of Nike Team Nationals. And of course I wasn't on a team to, that would have competed at that. But I went to Foot Locker West, and again, I think I was the second New Mexican overall and maybe a top 50, but so I don't know if I was as dominant. I think I did fairly well, but probably could have done a little bit better with a little more training. So yeah.
Well, and I'm sure it hurt a little bit after having such a good season to go into state and kind of have a little bit of a rougher time.
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, that was lessons learned. You think that it's the biggest race of my career at that point, and I'm gonna need extra energy, so I eat too much food before, and just stupid rookie mistake, and cramped out. But it's okay, it happened. So kept me running now. So
right, and now you've gone on, you made Olympic trials. So obviously, it's not something that held you back.
Right, exactly.
So after high school, you ended up at the University of Pennsylvania. What took you there, and what was that experience like?
I went there, I always wanted to try and be fairly well-rounded, and so it's very strong academically. Yeah, it's still Division One, and of course has a storied history of the Penn Relays, which was a, you know, that's a phenomenal experience just being a part of that, and knowing that your home host school is responsible for hosting it. But running wise, I didn't do very well. I was always kind of overtrained. I overtrained myself, as I should say. So I was underdeveloped and, you know, suffered a few injuries, some IT band injuries, 3 stress fractures and a foot my senior year. So that was kind of disappointing. But it was great being part of that team and that history. It really is kind of a storied program. But overall, college was a humbling experience. And I, you know, you go from being, you know, a solid runner in your home state to a place where, and this is true of any Division I school, you know, every other kid is a state champion pretty much, respective state. And then, you know, not being number one or not really producing like you'd want to. But it was good. It, you know, kept me hungry. And, you know, I knew that I didn't fulfill my talent there.
In that article I mentioned earlier, you talked about after graduating is when you did your first marathon in 2009. You talked about being injured, you know, through especially your senior year. So how did you kind of get through that to be able to finish a marathon, and what was that race like?
Yeah, so, you know, as you know, post-collegiate opportunities for Americans are kind of few and far between, so you're required to essentially just run collegiate season. Being in New Mexico, you know, there wasn't really access to any cross-country meets unless I'm with a, I mean, I remember running a few times at Highlands meet and UNM's meet in the fall for cross country. But aside from that, there wasn't much to do. So with me, I always have to have a goal to kind of focus on. And I knew eventually at some point I'd want to run the marathon. And so I said, okay, I'm just going to run a marathon. And so I signed up for the Twin Cities Marathon that first summer out of college. You know, I trained fairly hard at the time, I thought, at least. But, you know, and then I naively, I thought, oh, I'll, you know, I'm going to hit the trials qualifier. I think it was still 219 back then. You know, I don't realize how difficult that is until you actually attempt it. And so it was an interesting first marathon experience. Obviously, I hadn't done the requisite training. And I think it was about 20 miles in, I developed big blood blisters on my feet. And so I had to kind of stop and try and pop them. But that kind of became the norm for me with the longer distances, half marathon and up, until probably the last 2 years when I was finally able to get orthotics that really allowed me to run properly and not cause rubbing to occur for these blisters to appear. So yeah, the first marathon was definitely tough and humbling. And you know, the first one, you just kind of get it done. So I was happy to do that.
So you got these blisters, and like you said, something that kind of continued on with those longer distances. Is that why you kind of didn't fall in love with the marathon right away?
Not at all. So I've always, in high school, I think a lot of people are kind of pure distance runners, and you know, right away they love the 5,000 or 10,000. I always wanted to be a miler. I still have this love affair with the mile. After college, I would focus, save up all my pennies, and I'd go run track meets every spring in Arizona and California. I'd run 1,500, occasionally 5,000, 800, things like that. But I always just wanted to be a sub-4 minute miler. That was, I grew up at my high school, the late Dan Mass, who was an Adams State champion. So his father was my math teacher, and he's very proud of both his sons, who were, you know, of course, Dan Mass was an excellent runner. And then his other son, Brendan, was a, you know, national age group champion. So from seventh grade on, I'd hear these stories every class period about his sons, and you know, he had photos up on the wall of them. And I found that very inspiring, actually. You know, a couple athletes to kind of model myself after who went to my school. But Dan was a miler, and I always wanted to be a sub-4 minute miler, and I haven't done that yet. I've gotten kind of close, but so back to your question, I would focus on running track every spring. And then I did, you know, a couple marathons. I did Twin Cities in 2009 in the fall, and then I did Chicago Marathon in 2010. But again, it was just this thing where, well, I'm still young. I'm just kind of doing this for fun. You know, right. Something to focus on in the fall. Once I get older, you know, I kind of tap that potential in the track, I'll focus purely on the marathon. So that kind of happened. I didn't run a marathon from 2010 until 2016. So kind of a 6-year gap there where I was just focusing on track and occasional cross country race, you know, road races in the fall and half here and there. But yeah, I don't think I didn't have a love affair with the marathon. I always wanted to give the respect it deserves and train properly for it. And so it wasn't until 2016 where I said, okay, I'm going to really try and go for it and try and qualify and train properly.
You've talked about in your bio for the trials that you had spent 4 months at a training camp in Kenya. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was something I'd always wanted to do. I think it was my senior year of high school. There were a few Kenyan athletes, marathoners, that were training just down the street from me, literally just down the street from me. I befriended them. It's not often you see a Kenyan athlete running down the street in Santa Fe, of all places. And so one day I was driving and I stopped an athlete and ended up becoming great friends with some of them. Always knew that I wanted to go to Kenya and experience that running culture. So yeah, it was 2013. I was living in Santa Fe at the time, working and just kind of tired of what I've been doing, and was able to take kind of a brief sabbatical, if you will, from work, and went and lived in Iten, Kenya it was about 4 months. And I lived in an actual training camp with some athletes and through a management company I had known at the time. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience. It was, a lot of people think there's some secret or something special about Kenya and running. And the secret is there is no secret. That's what I always tell people. But being able to be around those athletes and understand how they train and what it takes to really get to that elite level was a great learning experience for me. I really treasured that, and I hope to go back someday. And I made some great friends in the process. But I was probably still a little underdeveloped at the time. I thought I'd come back and just run really, really well. And I actually came back and was maybe a little too underweight and anemic and things like that. But just the experience of going there and learning from that culture and meeting people there was really, really valuable.
You know, one of the things I've read a lot and heard a lot about the Kenyans is that their easy days are, they really take it easy if they feel like it, or take a day off. And that's something I think, you know, here in America, we don't always value. It's, you need to be out there training every day and working hard. And I think it's changed a little bit when you look on Twitter, Instagram, and follow some of these elite runners. You know, you hear about some of their days off and stuff. But is that something you noticed while you were there?
Yeah, so it wasn't something that was really new to me. Like I said, having met and trained around runners since I was in high school, Kenyan athletes, that is. I experienced that back then, and I kind of had taken that into my own training. And I'm never afraid to take a day off. I forget which coach it was, but he said you have to have the confidence to know that, you know, one day is not going to affect your training like that. So, but yeah, the thing with the Kenyan athletes, I think, is that they live a lot more presently than a lot of Western athletes. And so that kind of was maybe the biggest takeaway for me, is to not get so caught up in one race or one result. You know, they're very quick to move on. And that's, I think, an important thing to know and to take into one's running, is that, you know, you aren't one result. You aren't your last race. That, you know, you can have a bad race or a bad workout. It's okay. It happened, but it's in the past. And just focus on the next one. And so Kenyans are very good at doing that. And so part of that is the recovery and listening to the bodies more. So, I mean, I definitely have incorporated that a lot more to my own training.
Like you said, we've had Kenyans here training in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, using the state. And I think it's changed a little bit over time, where Flagstaff and Boulder have become the go-to places. And, you know, spending some time in Kenya with these Kenyans and in Santa Fe, you know, what advantages do you think we have in our state? And how would you describe kind of the running culture that we have here comparatively?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, honestly, that's, I talk about this a lot with people, and I'm really disappointed there aren't more people here training. Because when I was in high school, you know, this is part of, I think, why I really got into the sport and really became a student of the sport and got excited about it. But there were a lot of elite athletes training in Albuquerque. When I was in Santa Fe growing up there, like I said, it was just my senior year where those athletes had arrived. Even now, there's really not that many Kenyan athletes there. Some of them cycle in and out. But at the time, Albuquerque was this hotbed for certainly international athletes, right? Paula Radcliffe had an apartment here in Albuquerque. I remember distinctly my my senior year, I was going into one of the local running stores, and El Guerrouge was in there right after he'd won the Olympics, right? And that was just this kind of keystone moment. Well, this is a good place to train. And for some reason, there just aren't really any elite athletes training here anymore. You know, there, like I said, there's some Kenyans who cycle in and out of Santa Fe. But I remember at the time, you know, Mubarak Hussein was here. He still is here, obviously. But he was kind of really in his prime. And there were a bunch of other Moroccans and Kenyans. And now, you know, we have teams that come. There's always Japanese runners who are training corporate teams who come and train for a little bit. And then a few track clubs. Brooks Track Club always comes. Or Brooks Beast, I should say, come and train every year for a little bit. But it's kind of gone away from that. And, you know, I don't know why. I don't know if it's just, you know, Boulder and Flagstaff. I mean, Boulder's always been this hotbed of training. I get that. Flagstaff is great, but I always tell people Albuquerque, you know, New Mexico in general, just one of the, I think it's one of the best places to train really in the world, with the mild weather and the variety of terrain and different elevation access points, even within Albuquerque itself. You know, it's just, it's really wonderful. I think those are some of the advantages, but why there aren't more athletes here, I don't know. I really don't know. I've always wanted to try and start a elite group here, but yeah, certainly that was a big factor for why I came back after college. Excuse me, was strictly training here at elevation and in this great environment. I mean, Colorado is beautiful, don't get me wrong, but you know, with the winter's a little harsher there, and you're maybe but you know, have to stick to the pavement in the wintertime quite a bit. Same with Flagstaff too, but Albuquerque certainly has been a wonderful place to train.
Coming back forward, you know, the Olympic trials, what was the atmosphere like in Atlanta?
Yeah, that was really magical. I had gone to watch my friend Mubarak Hussein run the Olympic trials in New York in 2007. So I took a bus up from Philly and went and watched him there, and you know, knew then I wanted to experience something like that. And that was really well put together. But that was nothing like Atlanta. Atlanta, because of the course, I think allowed for a lot more spectators to be there. So, you know, for much of the course, it was certainly the first 2 miles, it was kind of unlike any marathon I'd ever taken part of. I mean, Chicago Marathon's pretty special the first 2 miles. There's a ton of fans lining the course, but this was just packed. Maybe, you know, I felt like 5-10 deep on each side the first 2 miles of the course, and then throughout, there were never any kind of quiet points except for the last couple miles on the second extension loop they had. But the atmosphere itself, it was just as to be expected. A lot of fans and a lot of people lining the course. So that was really fun.
You've mentioned Mubarak Hussein a couple of times, and you've talked about, you know, you've had this relationship with these other runners. Did you kind of pick any of their brains, those have been that have participated in Olympics or been to trials before you went?
Yeah, I did. I just spoke to Mubarak, and, you know, he honestly just says to have some fun out there. You know, I think that I went into it with a mindset of just trying to give it my best. Really, I know it kind of sounds a little simple, but I never felt any sort of pressure. I just wanted to give my best possible race. And, you know, it's hard. A lot of people, you know, because of the trials, unlike most other marathons you run, time doesn't matter. So you're just kind of going in and trying to react appropriately and, you know, manage yourself the best you can. Because after all, it's still a marathon, you know, so it's you can't try and play out in numerous scenarios. It just doesn't make sense. So, yeah, any advice I got was just kind of go out there and have fun and run smart.
Right. And I think in your interview, you had talked about that and just knowing kind of at a 2:16 that you were a little bit further back out of the, you know, the main group that was going to be duking it out, but still seeing what you got.
Yeah. I mean, like I had mentioned, I wasn't going there just to be a participant. I think initially out of college, that was always a big goal, just to qualify for the trials. And that's certainly a worthy accomplishment in and of itself. But I didn't want to go there and just participate. It kind of felt like that happened at the end, but I wanted to really go and slug it out. But I thought, you know, I think everyone was quite surprised how fast it went. I really thought that it would be 1 and maybe 2:11, and then there'd be, you know, 2:12, 2:13. And I still truly believe I have a lot, you know, a faster race in my legs than what I ran when I qualified. So, you know, you got to dream a little bit. I mean, why not? You're there. But yeah, I think I had wanted to go and just give my best, and maybe something would have happened. But unfortunately, it didn't go as well as I planned, but it's okay. So.
Well, I actually agree with you. Everything I was hearing about the course and then the weather that day, I definitely thought it was going to be a lot slower winning times, but there were some tough competitors out there.
Yeah, it was the way it unfolded was just, again, you can't really predict it. I thought that it would kind of be a slow jog perhaps, and then, you know, maybe halfway someone might break it open and go for it, but that was a very odd race. So.
And what did it feel like to be, you know, in the middle of that race with, I mean, people like Rupp, Riley, who ended up second, Jared Ward, you know, these big names in American marathoning right now?
One thing about me is I've never kind of been overly enamored with names and trying to put people on a pedestal. I mean, I've run several U.S. championships before, cross country or, you know, U.S. 10 mile, other distances, and been, you know, running with some of these other athletes who are quite a bit faster than me. But I think that's an important thing, is that I don't want to idolize them because I'm there to compete against them. But, you know, certainly understanding that, hey, I'm here and I'm competing with these guys, you know, it's quite an honor. And I was happy to be a part of that.
I think that's probably the best attitude you can go into any race with. When you were on the starting line, what was going through your head?
I just kind of thinking, well, it's finally here, it's happening, and just don't fall down. So the first 2 miles were very nerve-wracking because we're confined to, well, I guess it was, you know, one side of the road, so maybe it was 2 lanes, but it felt a lot narrower than that, and then lots of turns, and so, you know, it was just absolutely packed, and a lot of people running fast, whereas, you know, most of these elite other marathons I've run, you'll be up there, there's certainly quite a few elite runners, but, you know, at most maybe 20 to 50, and it thins out within the first half mile to mile. I can think maybe Houston Marathon might be a little bit different than that. There's just so many athletes, but still, there's a lot of road to run on, and Atlanta was just jam-packed the first 2 miles, and it was... Yeah, that was very nerve-wracking. So I was just on the start line thinking, you know, just get out there, get good positioning, but don't fall. So, and I guess there had been some people falling later in the race, but it was crowded for sure.
And I can't imagine. I mean, there was 200 and some men in that race. And
yeah, the women must have been just nuts.
So. Right, because they had almost 500 in that. Whoa. Were you able to check out the course before the trials?
Yeah, I actually, they had an opportunity for some of the athletes. The Atlanta Track Club was pretty gracious in allowing people to come out, and I think it was November. So I went out and, you know, ran 20 miles and did the course, a couple of different loops. And at the time I thought, you know, this is a very fair course. It's not as hilly as people are making it out to be. I thought it was fair, but I thought that you could run a solid time on it.
Well, and that was leading into my next question, was people were calling it, you know, honest, and other people were just calling it tough. You know, what do you think of it? What do you think of the weather that day? I heard it was kind of windy.
So weather was, you know, the course is certainly tough in and of itself, but it was the weather that was the determining factor. I think that what allowed some of these guys to run quite fast was they're in a big pack. You know, looking back at some of the splits, it was crazy. I mean, I think I ran my second mile in 4:50 something, and I was way back. And, you know, there were, I mean, maybe seemed like 50 guys up there running, you know, 210 to 212 pace. And I think a lot of them were sheltered from the wind. Me, I was just kind of yo-yoing back and forth. There'd be a couple guys I was running with, and then I'd be by myself or just off someone. And the wind was just incredible. And coming from New Mexico, you used to wind
right
in Albuquerque, but that was the windiest race I've ever run in, and just relentless. It was never at your back. It seemed to be swirling, and you know, 20 mile per hour headwinds while you're running 5 minute pace or close to that. You know, you'd have to take have a physicist kind of do the calculations for you there, but right. I'm sure it, you know, the amount of energy you're putting into it is exponential by quite a bit. So that was just draining. I mean, it was so tough. I remember my legs were done by, it's like 17, 18 miles. I mean, it felt like I'd run 30 miles at that point, and you know, I was just trying to hang on. So I remember there were parts of the race. Yeah, certainly by that point, I was just ready to pull the plug. But, you know, you talked about the atmosphere, and it was such a great atmosphere. People were out there cheering the entire time. They never kind of never died out. So, you know, I think I needed to keep going. And I always say you don't quit a race unless you're injured or sick. So, you know, looking back, I was initially quite disappointed with that, with my time. It was, in my mind, you know, quite a terrible time. But I was just proud of finishing, which is, you know, it's usually the last thing a lead runner thinks about. You know, it's always a given. But I was just trying to think a little bit beyond myself. And I think that helped carry me through. You know, I had a lot of family come out. And my family never really gets to watch me run. They probably haven't seen me run since I was in college. Wow. And so that's, you know, it's over 10 years now. So I had to keep going and couldn't drop out just because it was difficult. So I think that's the takeaway, is that you have to keep going even when it gets tough.
Right.
Because that's running. But yeah, the course was certainly just relentless. The hills were fair, but it was that wind that was the killer. That was... I just remember the last 24 miles, probably it was just kind of like, are you kidding me? There's a hill. It was just half a mile long straight up, and the wind was blowing against me. I remember just being reduced to almost a walk, and that was just a crazy feeling to have that. Yeah.
You know, and hearing you talk about it and the fans and just lined up, and I was able to watch a lot of it on TV, and it really did seem just people side to side and, you know, three or four deep in some areas, just constantly yelling and screaming. And it's amazing. It's just crazy. That was just over a month ago. And now it's, you can't even imagine that happening.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's, you talk about the current situation, and you know, I keep reflecting. I feel a lot of gratitude that I was able to run that, because a lot of people have been training for races, Boston Marathon, London Marathon, any race really. There's a lot of races, and they're not able to run them. And of course, there's no track Olympic trials this summer, so I feel very grateful that I was able to partake in those in that event. Just a short while ago. So,
you know, like you talked about, you were there to compete and do the best that you can. But was there someone you were kind of rooting for in that race that you were like, yeah, I'd be happy to see this guy, or even alternately on the women's side that you were rooting for?
You know, I honestly hadn't really thought about that too much. You know, I'm certainly a fan of I think Jared Ward is a great athlete and role model. You know, I'm happy. I think the team that got selected is great. I mean, Jake Riley is, you know, I think someone I look at and I'm like, well, he's running a lot faster on the track than I, and I've never really run 10,000 meters, but I'm like, hey, that guy ran 210 something. I can probably do that too. You know, he's a little bit bigger like me. I thought, hey, maybe I can do that too. I mean, Rupp is Rupp, and you know, it was expected that he would make the team. I never had any doubt about that. And you know, he's certainly the best there is right now. So I think the team, I was very, very surprised by Abdi making it. I think I would have, I mean, I think it's great that he's on the team. I would have been happy if I think one of the other Kenyan American athletes from the WCAP program made it. So I was a little surprised, but you know, one of them didn't make it. But I think the team, the guys that made the team is good. It's fun.
No, I agree with Abney. I really thought those last couple of miles that he was gonna drop off that little pack there. With him, Riley, and Career, I believe. But he ran tough, especially for his age.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it just shows that, you know, a lot of people talk about that too with age and running. And maybe that's kind of why my mindset's a little bit different from most in Western world, is having grown up with and run with Kenyans and been a part of that culture for so long. Running is an old man's sport, really, endurance running, and it takes time to develop. And, you know, Kipchoge he's not 34 years old. I know that. He's probably 40-something, for sure 40-something, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, but a lot of people just kind of pack it in early and think once they hit 30 that it's done. And I get it. There's a lot, you know, life events that occur here and careers and families that, you know, we have a lot more options available to us than probably a lot of Afghan athletes, but it just goes to show, if you're patient and persistent, that with time you can develop and perhaps fulfill some of the longer distance event goals that you may have had.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, going back again to Mbadik, at 50 years old, he ran a 2:24 marathon out at Twin Cities, which is, I mean, crazy to think about, but like you said, I mean, able to keep up that training and everything up to an older age.
Yeah, and I think his PB of, I think he's a 208. He's run 208, I believe. That's only happened in his 40s, you know. And so that gives me hope I can keep going. Yeah. So. But, I mean, he's also a very special athlete, so.
Right. So I'm going to change gears a bit. Years ago, I had picked up this book by Scott Carrier called Running After Antelope. And he's an NPR guy. In the book, it was a lot of political stuff and some really good stories, obviously. But he talked throughout of it, was sprinkled with this idea of chasing down an antelope and running it down in this core being of running. And then, of course, Born to Run came out by Christopher McDougall. And I mean, that's a book that, I mean, runners have been talking about since it came out. It's one of those books I think a lot of runners say, you know, it's a must read. And I had no idea that this was kind of turned into a documentary called Fair Chase that you participated in. Can you talk a little bit about how that kind of came to be and how you ended up working on this? And it sounds so cool to me.
Yeah, so I think, you know, like probably a lot of documentaries, they don't show everything. So I forget which year that was now, but it kind of developed through a journalist from Outside Magazine. As you may know, Outside is based in Santa Fe.
Right.
And going back to some of the Kenyans that have been training in Santa Fe, these guys I known since high school, we somehow got connected with this journalist. I'm trying to remember the whole story, like exactly how it unfolded, but they talked about the idea of persistence hunting. And so that's really what this is a persistence hunt. And so one of the Kenyans, his name's Andrew Masuba, who's kind of the main star in that documentary, back in Kenya, you know, he had kind of chased down small game on foot, kind of growing up, and said, yeah, we can try this. So we actually did this two summers in a row. The second is the result of Fair Chase there, and it was a lot more beefed up with the support the second year. So the first year we went out, and it was myself, a couple other guys from Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and then two or three Kenyan athletes at the time. We went out to Mosquero, New Mexico, which is out in the plains, just east of Las Vegas, about an hour and a half or so. You know, attempted to kind of run down an antelope, and we had really no idea what we were doing. I think Andrew Masuba, the Kenyan athlete, he certainly had a semblance of what to do and how to go about it, but none of us, the rest of the guys, had any idea what to do. So, you know, we're running around like crazy for in the middle of the summer over all the kind of rough brush and weeds and jumping fences and stuff. So it was kind of wild, but we didn't succeed. Excuse me. And so the second year, you know, they really got a lot of support outside. Journalists got a lot of support, I think, some freelancers, and wanted to spoil it, I guess, for anyone who's watching. Yeah. It was interesting, yeah. So a very, very fun experience, and you know, it really kind of goes back to this primal aspect of running and using it as a tool mechanism to survive. Certainly, I think that it would be fun to try again in the future, and it certainly I think is possible if you plan it appropriately and all things kind of align for you.
And I grew up in Las Vegas, so I know the area, and it's I've run through areas like that, and it can be tough. It's an extra, you know, you're jumping and trying to find these little paths through these little rabbit trails to get as straight as you can, and that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Tell me a little bit about Jackrabbit Race Productions.
Yeah, sure. So that's Jackrabbit. You know, it's a fairly new company. I guess my kind of value proposition is that, you know, I'm a company that specializes in maybe timing and producing endurance events, cycling races, running races, triathlons. But what's, I think, unique about my company and my timing equipment is that all our results are truly live, and we stream them, you know, through mobile results and through the web as well. So it's fun. It's a newer company, and I got into it because I felt that the level of race production and timing in Mexico was kind of substandard, and having participated at bigger races in the country, I wanted to kind of bring that to the state. And so, like I said, I've been doing race production and timing for several years now, but finally started this company in 2018, and we're doing well. We're growing. There's always some growing pains, and it's difficult to start a company, but I'm feel pretty happy with it. I mean, we timed 12 races last year and timed, you know, two of the essentially biggest races in New Mexico. So I was pretty happy with that. Timed the JUCO cross country national championships. That was fun. But yeah, it's a company I've always, a concept I've always wanted to be a part of. And I like race production, and I just want to bring a fun experience for people here in New Mexico. And, you know, I look at it as people just want an excuse to socialize around a common activity. And I feel race production is that for me. And if I can enhance it for participants here in New Mexico, then I've done a good job. And the timing aspect is just, I want to do it properly and really make it fun. So when you go to a race, you're not waiting around, there's no printing of results, putting them on the bulletin board. It's immediate, and you know, that's the age we live in, and why not take advantage of the technology that's available.
And you do some coaching through it as well, right?
I've coached for numerous years, and that's another aspect of the company. Mainly coach a lot of age group athletes, and I'm always expanding that as well. So I really enjoy working with others to help them fulfill their goals. You know, whether it's someone who just wants to, not just, but wants to complete a marathon or a half marathon, and time's not the main factor for them, or it's, you know, I work with a couple, like I said, age group track athletes, and you know, one of them's world record holder in her age group in a couple of events, so that's fun. I really like that. And then of course there's some Kenyan athletes I've been able to work with, and that's, you know, that's a challenge. But kind of this wide range of athletes I work with has been interesting for me to be a part of, so many different talent levels.
You know, so what do you telling the athletes you're coaching now without a race to kind of look forward to, or their race got canceled with everything, you know, going on now?
Yeah, that's certainly tough, because everything's up in the air at this point. I mean, myself, even with the company and timing races, you know, we've had four events. One has been canceled outright, and then three others have been postponed indefinitely. So I understand from that perspective, and then also as an athlete, the difficulties of trying to flip the script and just tell them, you know, everything is an opportunity. I truly believe that. I mean, sit there and feel badly for yourself and, oh, there's not a race now. I've trained hard for this. And I'm not so sure if I'm a fan of these kind of virtual races that are going on. I think that's okay, maybe. And if it's something you want to do, then go for it. But like I said, look at it as an opportunity. Start paying attention to things you've been putting off in life, other things maybe you've been too busy for, and then not necessarily running, but other aspects of your life. Now's the time to give those attention, perhaps. But with running, it's a time to work on kind of the ancillary aspects of being a complete runner. Maybe they don't always get the most attention, the strength training, the core work, you're working on mobility, things like that. Now is the time to really give those your full attention. And that'll only make you better later on, because things will resume. We'll go back to normal, hopefully. Sitting there and feeling badly, I think it's not the best attitude. So I just try to say, you know, we're gonna choose another race in the future and work towards that. But in the meantime, it's work on these other aspects, so it keeps you engaged in the process.
That sounds like a great way to motivate your athletes. So what keeps you motivated?
I'm trying to do the same thing with myself. And I'm not going to lie, it has been hard to get out there because, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, you know, even back to when I first did my first marathon, I needed a goal. And so, you know, immediately after the trials, you try to figure out what's the next step, what's the next goal. And at that time, I thought, well, you know, I haven't done track for a couple of years now. I'll go back and track and see if I can qualify for the trials in the 10K. And I've never run a 10K in the track. But, you know, I think I've kind of made big gains in fitness. So my goal was to start training for 10K, and I laid out a whole schedule and some races to aim towards. And then, of course, everything has collapsed, and that's okay. So with that, I think what keeps me motivated now is, like I said, just trying to focus on things that I haven't been the best about with my own running. And those are ancillary things, more mobility, certainly getting stronger, but just trying to maintain a basic level of fitness and then looking to the fall for a real fast marathon. And that's what I'm after now is a big PB to kind of re-motivate myself and you know, invigorate myself for next cycle already. You know, as the Olympics hasn't happened, but really trying to lower that time.
Right.
So that's my goal. You know, and I know September, October are quite a ways away, but I think if you can do the little things now to set yourself up for a good summer of training, that everything should go a lot more smoothly.
What's been your biggest disappointment or struggle with running?
I don't know if I've had a big disappointment, but my biggest struggle was certainly, or maybe frustration is a better way to phrase that. As I said, my very first marathon and then subsequent half marathons and the marathon after that, I developed blisters on my feet. I really thought I had the potential to qualify for the trials in the last Olympic cycle before Rio. I knew my fitness was there, and I felt the limiting factor was my feet. And I'd run the race, and it was like clockwork. 8 miles in, I developed these blisters, and I feel very thankful that there's a PT I work with here in town who makes orthotics, and he was able to kind of fix me and get me a racing orthotic, where now I don't even think about that. But every race I'd go into was, I was thinking about when are the blisters going to start. And, you know, a marathon's far enough as it is and hard enough as it is that that's the last thing you want to be thinking about. That is just, was not fun. So that was a really big source of frustration for me, because I really felt like, you know, I'm just feel like I'm unlucky. Like, how can I not fix this? You know, am I ever going to be able to run to my potential? Because I knew it was there. I knew it wasn't the lack of training, or it wasn't in my mind. It was really a mechanical limiting factor with my feet. So I feel very, very grateful that I got that fixed. And I feel kind of opened up new doors for me now.
And what do you think's been your biggest success so far?
I think my biggest success has been my persistence. And yeah, I think a lot of runners, we all have talents, right? Some are just naturally talented runners. I'm not saying I'm not, but I was never a phenom. You know, I think my greatest talent was my ability to focus long term and be patient and persistent with it. So I think that's my biggest success, is that I've been able to take the long term approach to running, because, you know, although I had some modest successes as a young athlete, I knew there was a lot more in the tank. And so being able to focus long term and work towards those goals has been my biggest success, and really understanding myself and what I find to be my definition of success as a runner. A lot of people, it might be a certain time or winning something in particular. And I think you know within yourself once you've found your best. And, you know, so I always tell people, I try to, you know, I measure success by how much I fulfilled the talent I was born with. And, you know, I still know there's a lot more in there. So it's just putting things together properly and, you know, keeping the long-term approach and then not focusing on what you don't have. I think a lot of us do that. You know, the myth of I don't have is what I have a board in my office, and I says, you know, don't focus on what you don't have. So that's the myth of I don't have, and focus on what you do have and being grateful for that and appreciative of it. So yeah, just trying to keep those type of things in perspective and always taking the long-term approach.
What's your favorite workout?
You know, going back to the being a miler, wanting to be a miler, I really always enjoyed 400 repeats, but like all out 400 repeats. That was always a lot of fun. I always enjoyed sprinting. So 200 meter, 400 meter repeats, hard intervals, I'd say were my kind of fun workouts that I really enjoyed. Now, since I've transitioned to the marathon, I think it's tempos where I'm really finishing fast, and that's kind of become a fun thing. So maybe that's that kind of race aspect of it. You know, I'll do a tempo and try to close the last couple of miles at, you know, quick pace.
And my last question for you is, what's your go-to song for getting pumped?
You know, I don't know if I have a go-to. Yeah, I don't really have a go-to, but I think something with a really good beat is always helpful. But I wish I had one song.
So yeah.
That's another thing too, is not, you know, I try to just, if I get out of my routine or I haven't done something, it's okay. Yeah, I think having one specific song, if I didn't listen to it, that might throw me off. So
good
just
point.
That, you know, something that's positive and makes you feel good.
You know, that's all the questions I have for you. Do you have anything else you'd like to say before we end this?
You know, I think if maybe there's some high school athletes here in New Mexico listening, a good takeaway is that, you know, you can really accomplish some of your running goals. And as I spoke about earlier, don't focus on what you don't have. Focus on what you are able to accomplish. You know, I grew up running primarily by myself, and it's always been that for me. In high school, we could barely field a cross-country team, and there wasn't a lot of cohesion amongst us, so we weren't training in the summer. I always envied that. The teams, you know, I go out now in the summer, I'll go train at an academy, and I can, you know, starting in June, they're doing drills at 6 o'clock in the morning. I just never had that kind of team culture to be around. So don't look at something like that as a limiting factor, is what I'm getting at. And know that you do have advantages growing up here in New Mexico. You're blessed with good weather and elevation and a really great running culture and tradition. And, you know, going out there and just trying to give your best and focus on what you control, you can control, I think is a good piece of advice that I might give to any kind of up-and-coming runner, and to just be patient and, yeah, I guess, like I said, take the long-term approach. So.
Thank you for taking the time to join me today. If you can, please rate and review, but most importantly, spread the word so we can grow this community. If you know of any runners that deserve a shout out or should be interviewed, or you just want to share your runs and connect with other people, use the hashtag RunningNM on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow me at RunningNM on both these platforms. If you prefer to reach out by email, you can find me at runningnewmexico@gmail.com. Music was provided by Philip Friedman. You can follow him on SoundCloud under DJ Teach. And until next time, keep running, New Mexico.